Racine at 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. The military says five Marines aboard a helicopter that crashed during a storm near San Diego Tuesday night are dead, and crews are beginning the grim task of recovering their remains. CBS's Eleanor Watson.
These were the Marines aboard a helicopter that was flying from Nevada to California and was reported overdue when it didn't land at its expected time in California. The aircraft was located yesterday in the forest about 45 miles from the air station where it was expected to land. That was after about an eight-hour search, and local authorities said the snowy conditions, the windy conditions really were a limiting factor in getting to the aircraft.
An investigation into the cause of the crash is underway. In a statement, President Biden says he and the First Lady extend their condolences to the families of what he calls five of the nation's finest warriors, along with their squadron and the Marine Corps. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden and Donald Trump are tied in Wisconsin in the latest Marquette University Law School poll at 49% each. In a five-way race, third-party and independent candidates get 22%.
I think it reflects the broad dissatisfaction with both Trump and Biden as the matchup. And so people unhappy with that are expressing it by saying at this point they'd vote third party.
Poll director Charles Franklin on the Devil's Advocate Show. The Wisconsin Council on Problem Gambling says it expects more calls for help with the Super Bowl coming up Sunday. Executive Director Rose Blazinski says today's increased accessibility to sports betting means more people are in danger of developing a gambling addiction. Anyone who thinks they need help is urged to contact the council. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WRJN News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The Kenosha County Jail roster still lists a Racine County Sheriff's Office deputy as an inmate. Formal charges haven't been filed, but the inmate listing online has 37-year-old Preston Kite as in custody, booked Monday morning. That website lists recommended charges. Among those are misconduct in office and lewd behavior. Kite was featured in news stories late last year, highlighting that he's the only Racine County Sheriff's deputy proficient in American Sign Language. Michael Bell Sr., whose son was shot and killed by Kenosha police in 2004, has said that if the city gives him the bullet from the shooting, he'll double his donation to an area charity. Bell thinks that bullet will reveal important details about his son's death. Bell's request to get the bullet released was denied by a judge, and the city has declined to do so. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WRJN News.
Join me, Lou Regani, as we explore the history of Racine, Kenosha, and Wisconsin. For over 30 years, I've told the story of our community, and now I'm excited to be part of Civic Media to continue this journey. So won't you listen in and even be part of the discussion? Tune your radio to 1400 AM or 99.9 FM and 98.1 FM. You can always stream the show live by downloading the Civic Media app.
The Lou Regani Show, Sundays 7 till noon on WRJN.
The Badgers lose again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers losing to Michigan, 72-68. Wisconsin has now lost three in a row. That's their longest losing streak of the season. The Badgers struggled with three-point shots, played poorly on defense. They're ranked 11th in the nation and losing in Ann Arbor to a Michigan team that came into the game with a five-game losing streak and a record of just 8 wins and 15 losses. The Badgers, now 16-7, play Rutgers this Saturday. Baseball, the Brewers adding some players. They've signed right-hander Jacob Junis to a one-year deal, and they've also added catcher Gary Sanchez from the Padres to a one-year contract worth $7 million. And now former Brewer Colin Burns saying so long to fans in Milwaukee after being traded to Baltimore.
You know, obviously thank the fans, thank the organization. That's the only organization I've been a part of up to this point. Had a lot of winning seasons, a lot of good baseball over there. Felt honored to be a part of, you know, the best stretch of baseball in Brewers history.
That's the Orioles' Colin Burns. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Cloudy and mild with scattered light rain possible today. We'll get to around 53 for a high this afternoon. The wind out of the south at 15 to 25, gusting to near 30. Tonight, scattered light rain, otherwise partly cloudy, 41. Tomorrow, sunny, 50. Saturday, sunny and cooler, high near 38. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
The Todd Alma Show.
You look at Taylor Swift. She fought off the bitterness of defeat when she lost her records, when she was kind of duped by a manager. People who told her she'd never amount to anything. But it doesn't matter if you like her music or not. I'm a fan of anyone. Doesn't matter whether they're an artist or an athlete or just a common Jane or Joe. If you've overcome something in your life, you're a winner. If you've made it through, that's what it's all about.
The Todd Alma Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Like a touchdown on your radio dial. Yeah! And home of the Packers. 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
Special edition of the Erling Room Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I can't sit still, Calvin. You keep up the good work. But I want to say, if you're just joining us, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, we'll be joined in studio by United States Senator Ron Johnson. He will be here from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. If you have a question that you would like to ask of Senator Johnson, go to civic.audio/Earl. And even if you have done that before, I think you should do it again. We had some technical difficulties a little bit earlier in the week, but we want to make sure we get your question. Again, civic.audio/Earl. So today is a very special day. It's Black History Month, and I have, again, one of the renowned professors of history in our nation, my good friend, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Professor Harvey, before, you know, we had to take a little short hiatus, you were going into the Civil War. And I want you, because you've always pointed out, I've learned so much from you over the years. The Civil War was the bloodiest war in our history. 620,000 people lost their lives from 1861 to 1865. I want to contrast that with World War II, 1939 and 1945, with all those different weapons and that we had, and 405,000 people died in a world war. In World War One, 1917 to 1918, 116,000 people perished. So without question, the American Civil War was the bloodiest war in our history.
Yeah, well, that's true, and it shows you just how intense it was. And the story behind that also is that, you know, the Confederation lost about 210,000, and the North lost about 420,000. Of those 420,000, 38,000 of them were African Americans, black soldiers. 180,000 of them joined the Union during the Civil War. 38,000 of them died. 20 of them won the Medal of Honor for battle. So when people talk about blacks being liberated, they helped to liberate themselves. And when I did research on blacks in the military, wrote my master's thesis in 1970, 71 and 72, I was shocked to find out that not only did they win the Medal of Honor, but that they also served with the Confederacy. See, they don't show that. Now, in the movie Glory, they show blacks going in and cleaning up the battlefield, picking up the dead, but the Confederates used them too. I had a professor, you know, down at North Carolina Central, Dr. Brewer, who wrote a book on blacks in the Confederacy. And he, when writing his book and doing his research, he indicated that the South wanted to use them, but they were afraid to arm them. Just like it is today, they're still afraid of black people having guns. That's why they went after the Panthers so hard. So when those blacks, if they started arming them, by the time they did it, Earl, it was too late. It was by 1864. In the North, the Confiscation Act of 1862 allowed the Union to go ahead and start recruiting blacks. And they showed up in large numbers, most of them. In some cases, over 90% of those that made up the regiments and the divisions in the Union Army were runaways. They ran away from slavery and joined the Union Army. And they and many more were also labor battalions that worked with the Union Army to clean up the battlefield, to dig the ditches, and the Confederates used them too. And this is one of the things that always bothers me about a lot of these movies. They don't show the role that blacks played before, during, and after battles that were fought. But all of them, those battles, and all those struggles in the Civil War has a lasting impact on us. It explains a lot about white anger and anguish today. Some people in the South, especially in the South, that's why you see the South when you look at it in elections, it's a solid red. And it's mainly because many of those people are still fighting the Civil War. They still are carrying some of the hatred that was left over because the federal government came down and changed them forever and took away a lot of their social context. And part of their social construct was having slavery, you know, black folk. And in fact, even after the war, when it was all said and done, one of the reasons why they had to pass the 13th Amendment was to abolish that powerful institution because the greatest money-making industry in the South was slavery. Tobacco started waning as a major product by the 1820s. But by the 1820s, you start seeing the emergence of a new agricultural product, cotton. And it was needed in Europe and all over the world where you had people, industries that needed warm clothing, and cotton was king. That's why they get the idea of the Cotton Kingdom. And so in that era of the Cotton Kingdom, those 11 Confederate states, they eventually become, after the Civil War, through Reconstruction, they eventually become the Jim Crow South.
So Professor Harvey, and I have to, you know, this is a participatory program, and so we've got some callers. Do you mind taking a few callers?
Oh, no, go ahead.
All right, let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you, Cindy. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Professor. I was just, I'm actually reading a book right now. It's called Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. It seems like the dates are pretty true to what you're talking about a woman named Elizabeth Garland, who was a black person who apparently managed to buy her freedom as a slave. So I wonder if you could just touch a little bit on how slaves were able to buy their freedom.
Great question, Cindy. Thank you very much for the call.
In some cases, for example, if you were under Catholic rule, and there were like in Maryland and places like that where you had Catholicism as a major part of the religion, there was a possibility of buying your freedom. And one of the things that I learned about my family was that we're Harveys, and we're part of that clan that Alex Haley came from. And some of us were able to buy our freedom. But for the most part, it was difficult to buy your freedom in the South. But those who did, they had a difficult time living in the South because they were only in 1850. There was somewhere in the neighborhood of around 100,000 black folk that lived in the South and that were free. But John Hope Franklin, his book From Slavery to Freedom, calls them quasi-free Negroes, meaning they were only partially free. But he also noted that even up north where slavery had been abolished, they were just only partially free because they didn't have a lot of rights, they couldn't write a lot of rights, they couldn't vote. But the ones that did buy their freedom, they were much better off than those who were slavery for life. And it did happen more and more up north because of the fact that you had Quakers and some of the other religious groups of the Protestant faith that felt that slavery was an evil. And they took part, like Elijah Lovejoy and some others who took part in it. Now, you mentioned something about Lincoln. And it's a seamstress. Remember one thing: his wife was her family was from Kentucky. They owned slaves. So Lincoln's wife came from a family that owned slaves. In fact, she was vehemently opposed to him pushing through the 13th Amendment. And some say that the 13th Amendment, by getting past Congress in 1865, that's one of the things that got him killed. So there's an interesting story there about that connection about free blacks. But yes, there were a large number of the blacks up north who got their freedom, and they helped to fill the ranks of that 180,000 blacks that served in the Civil War. And there were a lot of black nurses. Nobody talks about them either. Black nurses that went on the battlefield along with white women to serve as nurses for the Union Army. And the Confederates had theirs as well.
Professor Harvey, we've got some callers that we'll make sure we get to. 844-967-2789. Stay with us. Very special morning on the Earl Ingram Show. Professor Bob Harvey is in class, and he's in rare form. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show at 5:40 a.m. WAUK here in Waukesha, Civic Media Platform. join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. My very special guest, Professor Bob Harvey, is on the line. Let's go to the phone lines. And Eric from Wauwatosa, good morning to you, Eric. How you doing, sir? Thank you very much for the call. Thank you for listening.
Pretty good. Thanks for taking my call. And hello, Earl, and hello, Professor Harvey. I'd like to say that, you know, unless you read Derek Bell or James Baldwin or at least, you know, Toni Morrison or similar, you know, citizens of this country really think about the continued legacy of American chattel slavery. And I personally believe you spoke earlier about the Dred Scott decision, and I believe the Dred Scott decision lives on in that I believe white folks still don't feel as if black folks have any rights that we have the need to respect. And of course, an altered version, but I believe that still lingers as a legacy of that decision and enslaving black folks in general. You can see it on both a national as well as local level. And I'd like you to comment on that. And also I'd like to ask if Professor Harvey could explain how the U.S. courts, and this may have even been in the 1700s, how they changed an enslaved child legal status from determining it based on who their father was to who their mother was, which basically guaranteed a lifetime of enslavement and also helped male slave owners, obviously mostly white male slave owners, profit from this shift in the law. And if Professor Harvey could explain that to the rest of the listeners as well.
Hey, Stephen, man.
I'll hang up
great,
and listen.
Great, great questions. Professor Harvey, you want to respond?
Yeah, and in terms of the idea of the chattel slavery or slavery for life, what we call the Rati Vita, keep in mind that Malifa Yasante, in this book, African American History, A Journey of Liberation, talks about that transition. Franklin, John O. Franklin also talks about it in his book, From Slavery to Freedom. And so does Jerome Bennett in his book, Before the Mayflower. They both talk about, all of them talk about the idea of making that transition from, you know, just regular chattel slavery to a point where you could get your freedom after working it off, that was through indentured servitude, to the point that by the beginning of the 18th century, which is the 1700s, the first decade, actually between 1660 and 1710, you see all of the original 13 colonies. It wasn't just the southern colonies. Keep in mind that you don't have a United States until after the American Revolution. So it wasn't a Supreme Court. It may have been the courts, the local courts in the colonies that oftentimes were overseen by the British government. But they recognized the importance of separating white indentured servants from black indentured servants because they were getting together causing a whole lot of trouble. And when you mix Native Americans who were right in the area a lot of times, it caused some problems. But the separation, having black folk as slaves, the one thing you could always do, you could always tell that they belonged in the institution of slavery. So the mindset in all of the original 13 colonies, this is something that the mindset that Americans need to come up with. All of the original 13 colonies that fought in the American Revolution, all of them had slavery. And that's something that's oftentimes missed. We look at the southern colonies. And keep in mind, they're not states. They don't become the United States until 1781, when you have the creation of the Articles of Confederation, the first governing document of the American people. From 1781 to 1789, the document that governed the American people were the Articles of Confederation. And it was a weak document because it didn't have a strong central government. The Constitution that we drafted between 1787 in 1789, did that. It created a federal government through Article 1 through Article 3. And one key other point, in the Constitution, you can't help but deal with the issue of slavery. In Article 1, Section 2, that's the 3/5 clause. That's in the Constitution. Every time you open up a book, any book on the United States Constitution, read online or go to the library and get a book or go to the bookstore and buy one, a U.S. history book, in the back, they're going to usually have a copy of the Constitution. It reminds the American people that the 3/5 clause did not refer to Native Americans. It referred to the African people. And why did they have the 3/5 clause? the three-fifths clause in Article 1, Section 2 basically says that they're only three-fifths of a person. They're not even whole. Why did they do that? Because the Southerners had so many slaves, the Southern states had so many slaves that they felt that they could, they needed to count them. And every Southern state, when they finally embedded the Constitution and ratified it in 1791, every Southern state benefited from the three-fifths clause because they got at least one representative. So it was important for representation. So for about 40 years before the Civil War ends, what you find is that blacks are being represented. They are sending people to Congress. They can't vote for them, but whites can, because they count black folk in their population. The House of Representatives is based upon population.
Professor.
So they were getting free representatives in Congress, and black folk had no rights and power whatsoever.
Professor Harvey, hang on a second. Let's go to Stephen from Green Bay. Stephen, quickly. Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, I just wanted to share an experience that I got to have. My family and I went down to South Carolina for a trip, and we went to this plantation that sold a very harvested a very rare grain called Carolina Gold Rice. And in there, this used to be a plantation where slaves were kept, and they actually made it into a museum to teach about slavery. And in there, they had the original houses that the slaves were kept in, and they put our whole group in there. And they had us all stand in there all at once, and they said, now imagine, you're eating here, you're sleeping here, you're doing all your business in this place. And we were packed in there like cattle. And it was at that moment that I started bawling in the middle of it, because it wasn't until that moment that I realized the way that those human beings were being treated, and it just completely shattered me as a person and made me realize how horrible the slaves were really treated. You can't get that out of a history book. I had to go and actually live it. And if you get the chance to, I think it's something you should definitely check out for yourself.
Hey, Stephen, man, thank you very much. Professor Harvey, we'll let you respond. 844-967-2789, a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. Professor Bob Harvey, Black History Month, Civic Media. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show, news, weather, and sports.
It's Tom Allwald. Noon to 3 on Thursday, our guest is Keegan Kelly from Crack.com. Obscure sitcoms right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Migrant farm workers in Wisconsin are getting more protection against disease and illness. New regulations require employers to offer shade and breaks when the temperature hits 80 degrees. Shower heads and urinals will need to be upgraded, and so will access to washers and dryers. 125 companies operated more than 260 regulated migrant labor camps in Wisconsin last year. Congress is hammering out a compromise bill to address the large number of people seeking asylum in the United States. Vina Iyer is an immigration law expert. She says misinformation about refugees' motives is making matters worse.
We're concerned about those folks trying to cross unsafely, being exploited.
Iyer says a southern border crackdown will make things more dangerous for people seeking asylum. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WRJN News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The attorney for the person of interest in the Elkhorn double homicide is on the record about his client. Thomas Rout Jr. is the person of interest in the deaths of Gina and Emerson Weingart. The attorney identified Rout. He has a history of felony convictions, including a bar break-in and arson. He was paroled early in 2020 and subsequently enrolled at Gateway Technical College. He appeared in a promotional video for the school last year. Rout is currently on a parole hold in jail and has not been charged in connection with the recent homicides. Downtown Racine this summer will be fluttering. The 23rd annual public art project by the Downtown Racine Corporation focuses on butterflies. 24 artists will be selected to participate in the project, with each artist getting $100 to adorn a metal butterfly. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WRJN News.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I'm Trigvi Olsen. Steven from Green Bay. Go ahead.
The city of Green Bay is one of the best places in Wisconsin to live. Plenty of people that are Wisconsin nice.
Totally agree. Green Bay is kind of swing territory between the two parties, but people in Green Bay work together. I mean, people aren't asking themselves, am I wearing a red hat or a blue hat? They're wearing green and gold hats.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local civic media radio station and on the app.
I'm Pete with a 60-second showbiz beat. Gus Fring, also known by his real-life name of Giancarlo Esposito, star of Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, will play the lead in a new show for AMC called Parish. The show is a thriller set in the town of New Orleans. While speaking at a recent presser, Esposito called New Orleans a city of demons. On the show, he plays a luxury car dealer who will take them all on. Car salesman versus demons. That's a tough one. The series premieres March 31st, and I will be watching, as a network AMC has a lot of street cred. Looking for a new show? Check out Fool Me Once on Netflix. Variety reports that the show just became the 9th most viewed English-language TV show ever on Netflix. The show follows Maya Stern as she tries to solve her husband's murder. For last week alone, Fool Me Once was the 4th most watched show on Netflix, which is exactly when I had the pleasure of binging said program. Love me some color television. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 8 and 10 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. We've got it all today. Unseasonable warmth as highs soar to near 50, thanks to strong winds gusting out of the south up to 35 miles per hour. We'll see pockets of sunshine, cloudy skies, scattered showers, and even a chance of thunderstorms later this afternoon and into the evening. Right now, 44 degrees.
You know, I hope this is the best hour of your life. I'll tell you that. The Cripes Cast, folks.
Comedian Mary Mack.
He's noticed a very sizable increase on people off the lake coming onto our lake to fish it. You don't want everything to be popular and known about. That seems to be the way I also approach my comedy, Charlie. I think there's a theme.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
When you think about it, talk radio is its own type of sport. News Talk and Sports, 1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
Day after day, I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. No, that's a game that I hate to lose. And I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame? Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll.
All right, welcome back to a very special edition of the Early Room Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Again, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., we'll be joined in studio by United States Senator Ron Johnson. If you have a question you'd like to ask of the senator, go to civic.audio/Earl and let us know what it is you want us to ask of Senator Johnson. And you can also call at 844-967-2789. He's going to take calls. But I think you have a better chance of, you know, going to civic.audio/Earl and getting your question in than probably the phone lines, which I'm pretty sure will be jammed. My guest is none other than Professor Bob Harvey, renowned history professor. And Professor Harvey, before we go back to the phone lines, two young men, Eric from Tulsa, Stephen from Green Bay, young white men who know history. And Stephen was talking about right before the break, Professor Harvey, about his visit to South Carolina in one of the quarters where slaves were held. This is at the same time you see the value of those young men knowing history, that they want to take this away, Professor Harvey. Your thoughts?
Well, that's the whole thing about this. First of all, they had that critical race theory thing. They threw that out there for a while. And once they found out what it meant, they stopped that, if you've noticed. And then they went right to woke. And DeSantis made that part of his campaign platform. But now all the Republicans have embraced it, it seems. You know, the word woke, if you break it down to this acronym, it means way of knowing. And that young man standing in that slave hut, or even going through and maybe visiting one of the corner down in South Carolina where they used to sell slaves, all of those can be moving tributes to what America needs to know about slavery. That's the same as also going on an Indian reservation and seeing how Native Americans were pushed from their land, you know, from in 1830, the governor of the United States had passed, the Congress of the United States passed the Indian Removal Act, signed into law by the 7th president of the United States, Andrew Jackson, who also owned slaves from Tennessee. And they, you know, had those Native Americans packed up and shipped off to Oklahoma. You know, so we need to know these histories. You can't sit there and squash that. The great success story to this is that those young men are exposed to something that they would never have had it been erased and done away with. The bad news is that many people in this country, because there are about 20 states now that are planning on adopting some form of the woke concept.
Right.
They're going to be producing dumb children. The United States makes up only about 7.2% of the world's population. They'll go down into a world where the majority of the people are people of color. And they're going to be running smack dab into cultures and civilizations and societies of people that are completely different from them. And going down this blind alley of learning a white nationalist ideology, because that's what it is, a white nationalist ideology. Erasing history is going to make their children and our children too dumb, just plain dumb.
Professor Harvey,
and it's a travesty.
Professor Harvey, hang on. Professor Cassandra from Madison, I want to introduce you to Professor Bob Harvey. You have a question for Professor Harvey, Professor
yes.
Cassandra.
Yeah, Earl, thanks for taking my call. And Dr. Harvey, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today and have you recount our history, because it is being suppressed, the African-American history right now. I was looking at some information about our veterans, particularly our Black veterans, and our active duty military veterans, because I am a veteran, I did serve. And were you aware that during the Persian Gulf, 30% of the military personnel serving in the Persian Gulf War, 30% were African American? In general, 25% of Army soldiers are African American. Now, at this time, the military, they are not hitting their recruitment numbers. And the reason for that is because the demographic population of both whites and blacks are declining. And the demographics of Latinos or Hispanics, they are increasing. And their military service numbers, it is not comparable to other racial groups. And so one, what me about this attempt to wipe away our history is that our contributions are not being acknowledged as they should be. And number two, we're not getting accurate information out there. We should only be discussing allowing people in the country who are eligible to serve in the military and who can secure our national defense. African Americans have done it all throughout this country, and other demographic groups must do so as well. And I will listen offline to you. And thanks for coming on the show.
Professor Harvey?
Yes. Well, quickly, keep in mind that in the Vietnam War, Vietnam was the area that I focused on for about 8 or 9 years doing research on it. And people don't realize it, that blacks made up 10% of the population, but they suffered 20% of all combat deaths in Vietnam. They suffered 22% of all of the total casualties, which means missing, captured, or killed. And so we made up only 10%, but we were bearing a brunt of the deaths. And I interviewed the blacks who were returning from Vietnam in the 1970s, and they were saying that in some cases, probably 30 to 40%, and sometimes even 90 to 100% of the patrols that went out in Vietnam were black. But if you take a look at movies that the Platoon and some of the others, they don't even show that. You hear nothing about it. And there's not a day that goes by, because military history is one of the areas that I focus on. And, like Ms. Sanders, I spent 12 years in the military. Six of them was as a drill sergeant with the 84th Division, teaching in the Leadership Academy, but also, you know, going on military posts, training soldiers. And as a training NCO, whether you're on a platform, on a range, running it, or as a drill sergeant, you still see the importance of empowering young African Americans to go the military route. But what's sad about that is that we're losing so many young black men in so many different areas that they don't even make it up there long enough to get to of age and join. That's one of the tragedies. You know, and I don't know what can be done totally in our community to help out with that. Maybe, just maybe showing, having recruiters go into these schools early, you know, when they're juniors, when they're freshmen, and sophomores and juniors in high school, and let our military men show up to encourage them to join and show them some of the benefits, because they do have great benefits. I mean, there's not many places where any young person, black, white, Asian, Native American, or Hispanic, there's no other profession where a person can go in at age 17, get their 20 years in, when they come out there 37 years old, and they can start another career or either get an education because the GI Bill is there.
With full benefits.
And I've used mine to buy a house two different times. So there are benefits, but we have to let them know that.
Professor Harvey, hang on. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. You have a question or comment?
Good morning. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, thank you for the master class, as always, Professor Harvey, because every time you're on, it's just a breath of fresh air and education. So thank you. You know, I'm a person that believes that, you know, we should have national service. It shouldn't be, you know, just listen to Cassandra. I don't want it to be where we're segmenting the population again, Latinos from Black people, from whoever. All people should be giving 2 years of, I think, national service, because it might make people wake up to the fact of what is actually going on inside of our government. Because, you know, I don't want certain groups of people being used as cannon fodder for these wars that happen in the name of oil, or happen in for the billionaire class. So I just really believe that we have to get money out of politics, and we have to get the lobbyist out, because to me, that's what's really destroying this nation.
Hey, Tom, great points. Thank you very much for the call. Professor Harvey, you want to respond?
Yeah, you know, quickly, you know, keep in mind that's one of the things that I aspire to, too. I don't recite it as much and push it as much, but I think that should be a national service for us, because one of the tragedies, nobody talks about this. No one talks about this. Not the military people, the politicians. Nobody talks about the fact that we keep using the same troops over and over again. There's a burnout that takes place there. You can't get there and survive all of the wars, the changing environment. And those guys do those sometimes 5 or 6 time tours. You can't keep sending people in hostile environments like that. And the reason they're doing it is because we have a shortage of military personnel. Those three young soldiers that were killed over there in Jordan,
right,
you know, a week or so ago, you know, they were reservists. The reserves very seldom see active duty like that. Not overseas, but we're short of personnel. You get the National Guard that may be involved there, and then the regular personnel, because you got three different types of enlisted personnel. You got your regular, your National Guard, and your reserves. The National Guard is basically state. They're run by the states. The reserves, that's a federal entity. I was in the reserves. And National Guard would go before we would into active duty. And that's what we've done. We've used those people up over and over again. And now we're going down to the reserves. And that's a danger, because your reserves are supposed to be designed in an emergency to go in and train other troops to go overseas and join the regulars, and in some cases, the National Guard. Now, to get the National Guard, the federal government has to federalize them.
Professor Harvey, I got to get you to hang on. 844-967-2789. Very, very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. My good friend, Professor Bob Harvey. It's been too long. It's my mistake. I got to make sure I have him on more. 844-967-2789 is the number.
You're listening to News Talk and Sports for Racine and Kenosha. WRJN, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's a renewed effort underway to save historic buildings across Racine County. The nonprofit Preservation Racine is behind the mission.
We have a mission to identify and actively encourage the preservation of buildings, sites, and districts in the Racine County area.
Pippin Michelli with Preservation Racine. Michelli says the group is starting to list homes and businesses that deserve preservation consideration.
If we're not watchful, no one makes a decision about these things, and they get lost or ruined for new developments.
Preservation Racine is also looking to add more volunteers to support the effort. You can find more information, including meeting times, at preservationracine.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to WRJN, Southeastern Wisconsin's home for Matt Nair on Air.
Afternoon, really couldn't
welcome back to what is, I can't believe, the last few minutes of a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. My good friend, Professor Bob Harvey, who it's been far too long, and we're going to bring him back certainly this month. Let's go to the phone lines, and Cassandra's back. Cassandra, you wanted to say.
Yes, thanks, Earl, for picking up again. I just wanted to reinforce Professor Harvey's statement about the military and let your callers know that there is such a shortage of military personnel that the Pentagon is asking people to return from retirement to fill slots. And the shortage is so severe. The reason why we lost those three African-American servicemen from the reserve is because Pentagon policy states that 40% of active duty military personnel must remain in the United States for home defense. We do not have enough people for home defense and to cover all of those military satellites or bases that we have overseas.
So, Cassandra, here's what I'll do. I'll reach out to some military friends that I have and have them come in, and we'll do a special show on that because it clearly warrants it, and I'll definitely do that immediately. Thank you very much for the call, Professor Harvey.
Go ahead. Go back and take a look at this thing. People don't realize that since World War II, the United States has been, except for a few down periods, we've been in constant conflict. And look at all of those deployments they got out in what they call the Middle East, which is Western Asia. Right now, you've got almost 20,000 American troops over there, including our special ops, because there are special ops people over there, believe me. Your SEALs, Delta Force, Special Forces, Marine Corps, Special Ops, CIA Special Ops, those kids are over there. They're already over there doing everything that you can think of, sabotage and spying, collecting information. They're over there. But the sad thing about it is we're suffering a burnout because they've used those people too many damn times. That's too much. But all those wars that we fought in Vietnam, they did do the draft. And, yeah, I know a lot of drill sergeants. I know as a drill sergeant, we were always told that soldiers that volunteered were the better ones to train, and that's the ones you look for. So they went to a volunteer army. Well, draft army, you can tell the ones that are drafted because those kids, you got to deal with some of them, a recalcitrant attitude where they don't want to do this or that. And the thing is, though, with them, once you got them straight, they were excellent, just as good of soldiers as the ones who volunteered. But unfortunately, we got away from that. And the military patting ourselves on the back, and we're now dealing with regular Army personnel who are not individuals that are civilians that are drafted. They went to the volunteer Army, and they burned those kids out. We should never, ever, and I fought all the presidents from Obama all the way up, who sent those kids into combat zones more than once. The Gulf War and the Afghanistan conflict, those conflicts have lasted for well over 20 years, and it's burned those kids out. So we need to find a way to get out of that, or either go to the volunteer army for about a year or two. That'll get some of these kids off the street, and I guarantee you something else will happen. If they're to keep them getting drafted, they'll flood our colleges to get away from them, so that they don't have to get drafted. I was doing the Vietnam War, and I stayed in school, and I got drafted three different times between 1968 and 1971, but I was in school at the time, and I had the grades to show for it, so I was able to get around it. That's why I wanted to join once I got in graduate school at University of Wisconsin at Madison. And I decided I wanted to join, and I volunteered for the reserves because I was still in graduate school. But the burnout rate, and then, of course, other things that are happening in the society.
So,
and now we got this woke movement. We're going to have to start getting some dumb kids if we don't stop that mess
and go
to something else.
So, Professor Harvey, it's been too long. I deserve a beating. I deserve a thrashing because since I've been here at Civic Media, I haven't had you on. And I realize it's been far too long. We didn't get to where we are coming up to after the Civil War. So I'll be calling you back in the next week or so to have you take us from the Civil War to the civil rights movements and even up until today. Because when we talk about Black history in this country, we cannot leave it at the Civil War. But thank you very much. I'll be in touch with you. I really appreciate it. That's Professor Bob Harvey. And I want to say again, tomorrow morning we'll be joined in studio by United States Senator Ron Johnson. If you have a question that you would like to ask of the senator, go to civic.audio/Earl, and you can get that in, or you can give us a call at 844-967-2789. Calvin, great job as always. Thank all of you who took the time out to listen. I promise you we're going to keep on doing this. Up next, Matinere on Air, Jane Matinere and Greg Bosch. See you later.
I feel it coming closer day by day. Life would be ecstasy. You and me endlessly moving on a Sunday afternoon. Really couldn't get away too soon.
And sports.
Talk about your triple play.
Get this guy a jockstrap and a cookie.
1400 AM and 99.9 and 98.1 FM, WRJN.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It's a unique opportunity to ask your questions during the Earl Ingram Show on Friday, February 9th.
United States Senator Ron Johnson is going to be joining us here in the studio. He's going to spend an hour as we have some open dialogue. Phone lines are going to be open. We'll take some phone calls.
Join Earl and U.S. Senator Ron Johnson Friday, February 9th. The Earl Ingram Show, mornings from 8 to 10, here on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Your home for the Packers.
1400 AM WRJN Racine, 99.9 FM W260CV Racine, and 98.1 FM W251BU Kenosha.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report.